This program is Legacy, the man from Fairyland. Now, the life and times of Howard Morey, a man whose people have been in Newfoundland for more than 300 years. With him, you'll hear the voices of Michael Harrington, the editor of the St. John's Evening Telegram, Albert Perlin, the editor of the St. John's Daily News, Newfoundland writer Harold Horwood, his daughter Elsie, and his sons Tom and Reg.
I think the young folks of the day are all right, providing they come to their senses in time. We're living in a different age, and I have all the sympathy in the world for them, because they have no security in the first thing. Today in Fairyland, there's jukeboxes and beer taverns and cars galore. Television sets, everybody has them, and radios. But I don't know if people enjoy themselves like they did before Confederation still. But there's lots of fellas go down to the base and work, and they work everywhere here and there and everything. But the most of them are interested in is get work enough to get stamps. But it's a hard thing to say, but they don't seem to look at the people that are working day after day, year after year, paying in the money into the fund. And until they understand that and come back to their senses, we're going to have trouble. I don't give a darn where you go or what you do. I'm a Newfoundlander. First, last, and always, I'm not a Canadian. I'm a Newfoundlander. We got great benefits in Fairyland. But after all, I think if we don't keep our individuality and stand up for it and say you're a Newfoundlander and work like a Newfoundlander and do everything else that we're going to lose out. I think today, you know, if the young folks were put to the test, it'd be the same thing. I was in British Columbia and I came home for to go over with our fellows overseas. Well, I guess I suppose I do the same today. Freedom. You know, I asked three young fellas from the university about a month ago, would they fight if there was a war against Russia? And he said, no, he wouldn't. Better to be red than dead. My God, boy, I said, I don't know. I said, you don't know what, you just don't know what freedom means. I said, you don't know what freedom you have. I said, especially here in Newfoundland. Newfoundland are the freest people in the whole world. I said, I've traveled around a good bit. And especially in the outports, you have no rent to pay, you have no damn thing to do, you can go on and do what you damn well like. Now I have a copy of a letter that Matthew Morey, my great grandfather, wrote to Governor Campbell in 1785, asking for permission to take possession of a piece of land for fishery purposes. He said he had three brigs and two shallops in the fishery. And he wanted possession of this land for to build flakes and wharves and that. And he said that for 43 years, to his remembrance, you see, that'll bring it up to 1842 or 1742, that there was nobody living on it. And well, before that, they were over here before that because this Matthew, he ran a bank in the Channel Islands, Jersey, I guess, for years before that, and he first came over to see how business was in Newfoundland. And there was three partners, Morey, Prideaux, and Lemaitre. Well, both them, Lemaitre and the Prideaux, some of the Prideaux family afterwards came to Newfoundland.
Mm-hmm. Well, they were Jersey people, the Lemaitres, yeah. And the Prideaux. Were the Moreys too?
No, the Moreys came from Dartmouth. In Devon. Well, while the old man was over here, that's Matthew, my great-great-grandfather, I guess he was, Prideaux absconded with all the funds of the bank. So the old Matthew, he sold out all he was old enough to pay the creditors and decided to come to Newfoundland to settle. Well, the first of the old fellas, he had, I don't know how many children he had, but Matthew, the second fellow, the first fellow that came to Newfoundland, he had 10 sons and 5 or 6 daughters. But them 10 sons, four of them were foreign-going captains.
If many of the masterless men escaped capture, others weren't so fortunate, and for naval deserters, punishment was swift and brutal. Mrs. John Morey risked the full vengeance of the law, such as it was, by hiding a deserter.
She hid this young fellow in that house for six months and used to let him out in the night for exercise because they were flogging him to death. They were ill-using him on board the ship. And she was darn near transport. Now, only for her daughter being married to Captain Hill, the captain in the Royal Navy, she would have been transported, I guess, when they found out somebody told her she had the boy hidden there. And he was taken away from her.
He was a deserter from the
Navy.
Yeah.
How
old was he, Harry?
Well, he was only young till about 16 or 17.
Now, you say she had him hid out for 6 months.
Yes.
How did it come to be discovered?
Somebody told him. And they came and searched the house and found him.
What happened to the boy when he got there, when they took him back?
Well, he was flagged again. He died a short while after. I guess they flagged him, gave him hard treatment, and so he wasn't able to take it. He was only a kid.
In Newfoundland in those early days, the major enemy of the settlers was the elements. But often man came a close second. The naval press gang was always a threat. And later, merchant captains were not above shanghaiing young men for service in their ships. Such a victim was William, Howard Murray's great-uncle.
And I remember my great-uncle telling me, William Murray, telling me that when he was a young fella, 9 years of age, he was apprentice to his uncle, Harry Windsor of Agaford, to go to sea.
He's a sailor.
Yeah, and he used to teach him in the nights and go to school, and he said him and his cousin used to be sent ashore whenever they were in port. He'd send them ashore to church. He said they had to do up the white duck clean as a whistle. He said not a speck in it. He'd go ashore to church and he educated them. Well, he was up in Boston with his father in the ship, and he was shanghaied. He went ashore, I guess he was seeing what he could find out. Anyway, he was shanghaied and put aboard of an American vessel bound around the Horn to go up around on the Pacific side. Mm-hmm. And one day the mate was bullying him all the time. The last fellow on deck was sure to get a kick or a crack from the Yankee bully mate, you know. So he stood for a long while. He was 18 years old then. And at last he got tired of it. So this day he grabbed a marlin spike and hit the mate and knocked him out. But anyway, when the mate came through, the skipper said he had to fight it out. And he fought it out and he came home mate of her to Boston after it, and 2 years after. When I was a kid, things were pretty tough. I remember the bank crash in 1894, and my father carried on a pretty nice business, you see, and we were a little bit better off than most of the neighbors around. But after that, you see, he had all his years bills and everything paid in commercial and union notes. I guess he had about $8,000 or $10,000 worth. You see, he carried on pretty nice business in union commercial notes, and they only paid, I think, was 5 cents in the dollar there. The commercial bank paid, and the other paid 20 or something. But anyway, he went bust. Well, I was 9 years old then. I was 1894, I think. So the next summer, I went lobster fishing. He was knocked right out of business, you see. I went lobster fishing with my older brother, who was 3 years older than me, just around the place near home. He took the younger brother and went lobster fishing outside, you see, for to keep her going until he could get back on his feet again. Well, the next year, he, trying to save money for insurance, instead he sent down 4,000 tenter to fish down to St. John's in a schooner. And trying to save money, he didn't pay the insurance. It was only for 33 miles by water. It was in December. And she lost. Lake schooner took the crew off for crew loss, but the 4,000 tenter to fish was gone, so that put him right on the blink. Well, after that, we just had to work. We worked hard. We cleared a lot of land, about 20 acres of land, cleared with picking and mattock and shovel. took all the rocks out of it and all. That's where we used to spend our time after school and before school, clearing ground and working on like that. Well, he eventually got back the way he... well, he started a kind of a little business again. But he owed money to the merchants. Now, he didn't want to go in Solon because he'd lose our land, you see. We owned practically half the harbour, you see. The old timers, so it came off from England, you see, got half the harbour. You know, you see our boundaries up there. Still, I guess it's about only one in maybe in the whole island of Newfoundland today that's owned by the people half the harbour grant. Well, he didn't declare himself. Now, when I was about 15, I think, 14, 15, he was buying liver, you know, medicinal cod liver oil. And it went up to $5 a gallon. God, he cleaned right up. Well, I was worked like a dog that year. I was about 16 then. And he never gave me anything, only about $20 or so. He paid it all into the merchants that he owed the money to from the time of the bank crash. Well, I didn't like that, so I was disgusted. Next year, I went lobster catching. And I got $105 worth of lobsters. I had the pot smashed up three times. All I got was in August, I went down $105. Well, then, God. I went up to the railroad station, found out the price of a ticket to Victoria, British Columbia. $108 I got from them, $108.50. And the ticket was $105 to Victoria, British Columbia. Bought the ticket, I had $3.50 for to live on a fortnight between St. John's and Victoria, British Columbia.
Life for the Morays of Ireland was a hard and rugged business. However, people enjoyed themselves, possibly to a greater extent than today. Sports and dancing were the principal relaxations, and naturally there was always courting.
We had a lot of sport. And people were happier then, although they were poor, a lot happier than they are today, I think. Now, a few nights ago I was looking out for the wind at the hills, you know, in Fairyland, huh? When I was going to bed in the night, and I thought, well, what a change. I remember years ago when we were young, there'd be dozens and dozens of people sliding up, people up to 45 and 50 years of age, sliding on the hills. You'd hear them laughing and talking, no matter how frosty it was, and skating on the ponds. Today there's none of that. You can walk the whole length of the place today. It's either into the jukeboxes or beer bars, or stored away in cars. Well, now, we used to play at the games, and the funny thing about it is, the games we played were games that made you be able to run. We played hide-and-seek and rounders, something like baseball, only played with a hand, and football. And the footballs you used to have was a cow's bladder. Nobody could afford to buy a football then, times. A cow's bladder blown up and covered over with an old sock or something like that. And my God, when that'd get wet and you get hit in the face with it, it'd stink. And then we had jumping, high jump, and broad jump, and a long jump, and a hop, skip, and a jump, and a pole vault. All those games we played seriously until we were right up in years.
What about dances?
Oh, dances, my dear man.
Well, tell us.
On all the bridges, you know, the big, every night. You take long nights in the fall year and winter. There was no, the fall mostly, there was no such thing as radios or television or anything to keep in. Well, you'd meet on the crossroads, you know. Say, now, you know where our house is going up to the, every crossroad, there'd be two or three fellas standing, waiting for the fellas to leave down that crossroad to come up, you see. And they stand there, and that's where they gather, on the crossroads. Every crossroad was the same. Well, then maybe they'd say, what about a dance? And they'd go to some bridge, an Ayers bridge, and by there'd be a girl or two or three girls come along, and maybe four or five girls come along. Somebody had a mouth organ or a juice harp, or if you were lucky, an accordion. If not, some fella'd give chin music, sit up on the rail of the bridge, pardon me. And you dance away there. Boy, it was great fun. I can remember the first girl I kissed yet as well as it was only yesterday. God, she was blushing like a And they can show us eye for that, man. But after being away for a while out in Western Canada, I learned different things. But people were very modest. Well, certainly then, too, you know. There's a lot of difference between having your arms around a girl with a modern dress and having your arms around a girl with 10 or 15 petticoats. And, well, three or four petticoats anyway, made out of heavy stuff. The girls were nice. And a funny thing, you know, you take the girls sometimes, they used to wear rough leather boots and homemade stockings and everything. God, they were lovely still.